I'm Suzanne Hogan. Steve Kraske is away. This is Up to Date. Consumers are demanding smaller homes than they used to, looking for more quality than quantity, utilizing every part of available spaces, desiring more energy-efficient models, more universal designs, and eliminating access. Today, discussing this growing trend in home design and some easy ways to change the space you live in to create a more functional space for your changing needs. Plus, later in the hour, weather pending, let's step out to the backyard and look at what kind of cocktail ingredients are growing in your garden, or what you should be growing in your garden this spring. A conversation about the relationship between the booze we drink and the things we grow with a drunken botanist. But first, we welcome Sarah Susanka, author of The Not-So-Big House, here to talk to us about this growing trend of not-so-big homes, or rather, not as large as what was previously popular, plus small ways you can change your house to make a significant difference in your living space. Sarah Susanka, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much, Suzanne. It's great to be here.
Sarah Susanka is the author of The Not-So-Big House, The Not-So-Big Life, and Not-So-Big Remodeling. There seems to be an ongoing not-so-big theme here in the things you're a part of, but a lot of the stuff you're working on is growing in popularity and becoming bigger. Can you talk about the not-so-big philosophy?
Absolutely. Well, you're perfectly right about that. I started writing this book series, and the first one was The Not-So-Big House, which actually came out initially in 1998. As a result of my seeing houses getting bigger and bigger and bigger, I was a residential architect, and I realized that when people came and talked to me about what they wanted, they weren't really interested in size. They were interested in the qualities and character of home. But because we are also focused on square footage, that was the only tool that they were using to think about their future house. And so I started to look at what is it that people were really wanting. And they wanted a place that really felt like home, that fit them more like a glove than like a sack, and where they could use their dollars to make a difference in the places they lived every day. So I wrote the first book to help people see how to make their budget go to just the spaces that they really needed and to make those really beautiful and allow those spaces to do double duty for the rare occasions when they had formal guests over.
You say this not-so-big philosophy stems into how we inhabit our planet and day-to-day lives, kind of more of like this life philosophy. Can you give some specific examples here?
Well, really, in The Not-So-Big Life, which was another in the series of books, I really took that same attitude about how to use every space every day into how we live our lives. And so oftentimes we spend a lot of our time filled with obligations and things that might have had meaning 5-10 years ago, but today really don't, but we just do them out of habit. And so in just the same way that we fill our houses with stuff that we don't really need anymore, we fill our lives with, events and things that aren't really meaningful anymore. And so in both cases, whether we're talking about house or life, I talk about paring away the stuff that's no longer meaningful so that we can really have a place and a life that is wonderful and that really feeds us.
So then tying this philosophy back into architecture and design, can you talk about how the not-so-big concept has even changed since you first wrote the book?
Well, it's shifted in a certain way in that a lot more people are now interested in thinking about how to really right-size their homes. There was a period shortly after the first book came out where there were certainly quite a lot of people who embraced it and said, gee, this is exactly what I needed. I knew I didn't need all that space. But there were an equally large number of people who said, what are you talking about? Why wouldn't I want more square footage? Well, since the recession, people have, I think, collectively realized, why am I heating and cooling all this space that I don't really need? I rarely even walk into. What's the point? And so they're now looking to the Not-So-Big House series as a way of finding the right size of space and making that space really, really fit them.
So there's a growing popularity across America of people desiring smaller homes, utilizing more space within their homes. And we're going to talk about some local examples. We're also joined today in studio by Patrick Willis of Willis Construction, a custom home building company here in Kansas City. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Your company has been utilizing some of these principles with the Not So Big series that Sarah Susanka talks about. Can you talk about specifically how your company is utilizing these principles in design?
Sure. As you said, we're a big proponent of Sarah's home by design concepts. You know, the not so big, it doesn't necessarily mean small. What I like what Sarah said, it means the right size. Things have to be adjusted in current floor plans. Sometimes it's hard to remodel an older home to get to this point. But we were talking about before the show about our Clydesdale plan, which has been really popular. One of the things you won't miss about that house is the absence of a formal dining room or a formal living room. The house is really open between the living room, the eating area, and the kitchen. Additionally, it's got a removable glass wall that goes out to a screen porch with a fireplace. One of the things we've learned from Sarah is in big open spaces like this, how do you divide up the spaces so it feels right and it's cozy? One of the things Sarah talks about in her book or in her books is placement of furniture to help define rooms, as well as ceiling trellises. We've also used stone soffits to divide the rooms at the ceiling level. And that just gives the house a good feel when it's so open like that.
The Clydesdale plan won the Kansas City Home and Garden Award for Best Empty Nest category. Why do you think this design appeals so much to empty nesters?
Well, a lot of empty nesters are wanting to get to a home that has a nice open feel for having their families over to entertain or guests. They like the openness because everyone seems to hang out in the kitchen and the living area, and so they want all that together. Outdoor living, even in Kansas City, is a big deal. To be able to open up the house to an outdoor area for entertaining purposes or just evening relaxing.
You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. I'm Suzanne Hogan. We're talking with architect and author Sarah Susanka and Patrick Willis, a home builder here in the Kansas City area. How are some of the homes that you're creating now different from when you first started in the business?
Well, generally, they're smaller from a square footage standpoint because they're not necessarily. What people are doing is looking at the actual rooms they're putting in homes. There's fewer rooms, but sometimes they're a little more spacious. So I think that's one. And main floor, masters, outdoor areas, like I said, screen porches with fireplaces. Those are a lot of the changes that we've seen.
And Sarah, across America, I mean, are you seeing an actual physical size difference here? And what is the difference?
Well, there is a difference. And, you know, The phrase not so big means a lot of things to a lot of different people. For some, it means, you know, moving from, say, 2,400 square feet to maybe 1,800 square feet where they don't have those formal spaces that Patrick was just talking about. So it's essentially they're living in just the same amount of square footage, but they've eliminated the rarely used spaces. For other people, it can be a larger home, but something that maybe for some of us would mean more square footage than we needed, but for that particular family or household, that's what fits them, but they've designed it or had it designed so that it really does get utilized, all the square footage gets utilized. So I see that happening across the country, and I do see overall a trend downward in square footage. We're not so focused on the square footage. Thank goodness, it's about time. You know, we're looking at how do we make the house really feel good as opposed to just be bigger than the neighbors.
Another thing that Sarah emphasizes a lot in her books is sustainable living. And this is something that's very important. You know, I kind of think of it as a house that's fit for life. We're incorporating a lot of the universal design features that Sarah talks about, wider hallways. A lot of our homes now have elevators and zero-step entries. I'm a certified aging in place specialist, so that we focus on those universal design features. And so it's a house that you can live in for life, even with physical challenges.
And well, when you say universal, I have a hard time imagining that because everybody's aesthetics is so different. Can you give an example of what a universal design would be?
Well, universal means it suits the physical needs of anybody, even a house that can allow for wheelchairs because it has wider hallways. It actually feels better to everybody. So that's kind of where the universal aspect comes in.
And then within design, Sarah, yeah, I was hoping maybe you could talk about how people's aesthetic, personal aesthetic, can come into those universal designs to reflect their lifestyles.
Yes, it's actually really important to understand that universal design isn't talking about the aesthetic. It's talking about the practical needs of bodies, you know, and how we maneuver through space. And those principles can be applied literally in any aesthetic. So the aesthetics are something that are personal, but these universal design strategies that Patrick is talking about are really increasingly important, especially as our population is aging, to make sure that all of our homes are really sustainable, not just from a materials and energy efficiency standpoint, but also from livability.
If you have questions for Sarah Susanka or Patrick Willis on tips of how to apply some of Sarah's not-so-big design philosophies within your own home, give us a call. Our number is 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us at updatedate@kcur.org. Have the two of you actually met?
We have indeed. I was actually here last year for the Kansas City Home Show, and will be again at the end of this week. And Patrick was able to take me around one of the houses that he had built based on a design that I did that's available for sale. And so they did a beautiful job, and I loved seeing it. So it's really very exciting.
Is there a level of collaboration that happened here?
I actually didn't know about the house at all until I was coming as a speaker for the Home and Garden Show, and Patrick's company contacted me and asked me if I would like to see it, and I said yes.
So, Patrick Willis, why did you decide to take these ideas of Sarah's and apply them in this way with your business?
Well, I knew about Sarah's principles, and I have for a long time, and they seem to marry themselves to a lot of the things that we naturally do. We had a customer that wanted a custom-designed home. We went out and bought one of Sarah's textbooks, and we actually had it on the job all the way through the process. Sarah saw it. It was a big mess when we got, even though she signed it when she was here, it was full of dust and dirt. But
those are my favorites, the ones that are well used.
But it was helpful for for everybody all the way through the process to actually see what this house was supposed to look like when it was done.
Lindsay writes on KCUR's Facebook page, "Three kids, husband, dog, and myself in less than 1,000 square feet and feeling fine. I like to spend my money on fun things instead of where I sleep." So there's this idea that when you want to make these big changes in your home, it kind of costs a lot of money. And how do you budget these changes so that everybody can kind of look at their space and make changes that they need to feel more comfortable and at home?
Well, in fact, one of the things I'm going to be talking about at the home show is exactly that we can spend a lot of money on a remodeling, obviously, or on a new house. But there are often also very simple strategies that are inexpensive but that make an enormous difference. One example that I often cite is that if you have a long hallway in your house, oftentimes it's lit from above and it's kind of dingy, doesn't feel good. But if you put a lighted painting at the far end of that hallway, it transforms it because we are naturally programmed to move towards light. We enjoy that experience. And so that lighted painting transforms not just the hallway, but also your feeling about the whole wing of the house that is accessible by that hallway. And that light bulb, you know, that little fixture, recessed light probably above the lighted painting, might have cost you $300. That's really a good value that makes an enormous difference to your feeling about the house. And there's lots and lots of small tricks like that, I call them not-so-big moves, that make, really transform a house into home.
We've got examples of that as well. I was going to use the word tricks to trick the eye, mm-hmm. But one of our homes where we've incorporated Sarah's ideas has a vaulted ceiling with a beam structure going through it. But what we've done is planted mirrors up high on the wall on each end, so it gives the illusion that the house actually keeps going. So it's the feel you have in the house, not necessarily the size of it, but the use of mirrors and accent walls just make a big difference.
We're going to take a call from Matt in Baldwin City. He called 816-235-2888. Matt, welcome to Up to Date.
Hi, and I am familiar with Sarah Susanka's work. I really like your book tremendously. I had arrived at this same conclusion about 15 years ago, and when I looked into the possibility of building smaller, higher quality houses, the answer I got was banks loan on square footage, and they have no way of determining one thing qualitatively from another. And
yeah.
It sounds like it's part of a dysfunctional system that has ultimately been ruinous to society. I wondered, how do you deal with that?
Well, it is, you're absolutely right. It does present some interesting challenges. But in my experience, when you talk to your lender or to your banker and show them what you're planning, if you can get them over the hurdle of it's not about the square footage, it's about the quality, there are certainly houses that are of this quality that are being built and are being financed. Oftentimes, I'm an architect, and architects are very familiar with this issue, and you just have to be able to help the lender understand what it is that you're doing, and usually there's a way to show that this is going to be a house that will maintain its value. That's the thing that is they're most worried about.
Mm-hmm.
In the current economy, that's a little challenging because everybody's a little gun-shy, but they're coming back on board. So,
well, it's interesting that you address the cultural habits, the idea mm-hmm. that there's something, you know, deeper down at the bottom. If you drill down, you can understand what is motivating people to need. You know,
that's right. There's a
big
fear that if you build less square footage, you're building a cheaper house. That's what's driving all of this focus on square footage. So if you mm-hmm. can get past that hurdle and point out that we're actually building a higher quality house that is going to improve the quality of the neighborhood, not decrease it, that's really
right.
what's driving the issue.
Right. What will become of the giant mansions that were built into torn down spots in neighborhoods? You know, when they were going to a neighborhood and, like, tear down a nice old house and
yeah.
build something that went all the way to the edges.
What's
going to happen to that?
It's a very
stuff?
Good question. There's a lot of speculation about, you know, what will happen to those. If you look at the Victorian era, when we had actually a similar phenomenon of very large houses, they ended up, over time, getting turned into, duplexes and triplexes. There's a number of different functions like that that will really make better use of all of that square footage. But it's a really good question, and we don't know really what the answer is going to be yet.
Thank you, Matt, for calling in. Sarah, you've been to Kansas City then, right?
I have, and I love it. Wonderful city.
There's a lot of great old homes, old
yeah.
neighborhoods. And you say it's important to keep the character of a place in a community. I'm wondering, what advice do you have for people living in older homes, older neighborhoods, who are trying to keep up the integrity of their old homes, but also utilize some of these ideas that you talk about?
I really strongly advise people, if they can, hire an architect to help them, even if it's just for a few hours of help, to get the outside to look as though it fits with the neighborhood. It is the best money you're going to spend. It will protect your own investment. It will keep you good friends with your neighbors. And over the long haul, it will keep the neighborhood feeling the way that it does now, which is so important. Those older neighborhoods can get damaged so quickly with just one or two really poor additions or remodelings. So an architect is a tremendous asset to your design process and someone who can help you really fulfill your dreams and get your dollars where they are really most appropriate.
Patrick Willis, Willis Construction.
One of the things I recommend to somebody thinking about a remodel or a new house is also what Sarah said, and that is find a remodeler or a builder that you trust. And then go to the architect with that builder. We accompany our clients to the architect's office, whether it's Sarah or whatever architect it is, because as we go through the process, we give recommendations on value engineering a home so that you get the most for your money. Architects are good at that too, but it takes a builder who's knowledgeable about what current pricing is all about, because that changes all the time.
Patrick, and that's absolutely right. You need that input of the dollars and cents. Very important.
What neighborhoods do you primarily work in, or are you all across the region?
Well, we're across the region, mostly in southern Johnson County, but also up in the northern Johnson County. But we're actively building throughout the area, Mills Farm, White Horse Villas, Glen Abbey. We're just kind of, we have a couple models that have a lot of Sarah's principles that will be shown in the Spring Parade of Homes, April 20th through May 5th. But most of what we do is custom.
I want to get back to some of these basic tips and tricks for people that don't own their own homes and maybe are renting or living in an apartment in already smaller spaces. Can we talk a little bit more about some basic things that can be done within the house to make us utilize our space as best as we can?
Absolutely. One of the things that is really obvious, but most people don't think about it, is make sure you've got comfortable furniture in the rooms that you have. We often have a formal living room, and for some reason, we end up filling it with formal furniture that we don't want to sit in. So you may have a room in your house right now that's waiting for a function that doesn't get performed. You think about what spaces do you wish you had in your house, and then take a look at the rooms that you use least in your home right now. Could you either eliminate that function, in this case we're talking about a formal living room that rarely, if ever, gets used, and instead turn it into, for example, an in-home office, or a music room, or a library, or something like that. Those are the kinds of things that whether you own your house or you rent, you can make much better use of space.
816-235-2888, 816-235-2888. Also, getting back to specific rooms, I want to talk about kitchens, which is kind of the space where everybody seems to want to gather, whether you want them to or not. How can we utilize kitchen space better to the best of our ability with what we have?
Well, again, oftentimes the kitchen is poorly laid out. So just starting by looking at what space do I have? Oftentimes there are doors, for example, that are in the way, where you'll have a door on every wall. That is a very difficult kitchen to lay out. But if you can then move one of the doors over so that you can create, for example, a U-shaped kitchen, that will be a much, much larger work area in exactly the same square footage. So there are some of those very simple tricks that can make a very big difference. In not-so-big remodeling, I enumerate a lot of those ideas. That book just came out in paperback, and it's got all that kind of detail that you need to think through in order to make your house work.
I like Sarah's thought about the U-shaped kitchen, and our homes are all incorporating that design, but also what's off the kitchen, what's right in in proximity to the kitchen is important too. For example, we're doing pocket offices that are just like small home offices, not full-blown big studies, but that are right there off the kitchen. So it's real handy. We're moving a lot of the laundries into the master closet, stackable laundries, because that's where people think now it's more accessible. And we're also, many of our homes have basements underneath the garage, which is really inexpensive space. They're also in this area. It's kind of comforting if a tornado is coming in, but it's just great use of space, storage and playrooms underneath the garage.
I'm also wondering about bedrooms, which can have a really big impact on how people feel. It's where you wake up. It's where you go to rest. What are things that you can do within your bedroom to make it feel like you're utilizing all the space and also have kind of a calming quality to it?
That's a great question. And one of the things about a bedroom is that oftentimes we end up giving them short shrift because we don't think about what you just described. This is where you wake up and welcome the world every morning. So I encourage people to use, if you've got a limited budget, just use paint in an innovative way. one of the things that I often encourage people to do is to pick a wall that's really sort of a focal wall, the most important wall in the room perhaps, and paint that a different color than the rest of the room. Might be the wall behind the bed, for example. That, just painting it a different contrasting color, gives the room a personality. It's almost like it gives it a face. And that little strategy all by itself can make you feel very differently when waking up in that room.
We're going to go to Melissa. Melissa in Overland Park, welcome to Up to Date.
Hello.
Melissa, you have a question, Melissa?
I did. Going back to what you were discussing with apartments, did you have any other tricks kind of touching on like expanding the space visually? I know you talked about mirrors at the top of ceilings, but anything like that that wouldn't be permanent that could then be moved to another apartment if I moved?
Yeah, right. Is your apartment one that allows you to paint?
It is not. That's
okay.
One of the issues.
Yeah,
I'm
okay.
Stuck with the apartment beige.
Okay.
So.
Well, one of the things that you can do, and it's honestly, apartments are tricky because you are so limited in the changes that you can make. But if you can arrange your furniture so that it emphasizes a diagonal view across the space or through the space from one room to the far opposite corner of the adjacent room,
okay.
What happens is that your eye believes that there's more space there than there actually is. So
okay.
It's a little trick that architects actually often use in order to make a smaller space feel larger. But that's one that works pretty well.
Very cool. And then just use, like, smaller furniture so that you can use the space behind, I'm assuming.
Yeah. That helps.
Versus, and, like, blocking off corners.
Right. And surprisingly, if you've got the space, using a folding screen can actually, mm-hmm. it suggests that there's more space behind it, and so your eye believes that there's more there.
Oh, that's cool.
Melissa, thank
Very
you
cool.
so much for calling in to Up to Date.
Thank you. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks, you too. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. I'm Suzanne Hogan. We're talking with architect and author Sarah Susanka and Patrick Willis, a home builder here in the Kansas City area. So it sounds like openness is something that everybody kind of wants. And I'm wondering if you can describe a layout of an ideal open layout when you first walk through the door, Patrick, and some of the designs that you're creating. You walk through the door, and what do you see?
Well, in our Brooks model in Mills Farm that will be on the Parade of Homes, when you walk in the front door, first of all, no matter what size of home we build, a bit large or small, I like the front entry to look substantial. So when you walk up to the house, you have a certain feel. When you walk through the front door, there is a curved staircase to your left, but then you just go through the entry and you go into one large open two-story living room that's also open to a kitchen and a breakfast room. The second story is open to the first story. All the kids' bedrooms are upstairs, and they all open up to a central loft that has balconies that look over that open living room. So the family is very well connected that way because it's all very open. But we've also incorporated several retreat areas in the house, like kind of private little offices that are actually located in the back of the house. So many people are working out of their homes these days. Their traditional office that's on the front of the house is a little cold in some respects. I mean, if you're working out of your home, I think you'd enjoy looking at your backyard or the back porch more. So that's kind of why we've incorporated that.
Sarah Susanka, I want to talk about home layouts internationally, because your work has spread throughout the world. How are you seeing some of these principles be applied in other cultures?
Well, it's actually fascinating to watch. I grew up in England, and a lot of what I write about was learned from a more European scale of spatial use. But what I'm finding now is that I'm getting... I have fans literally all across the world. I just got a letter this morning from a young woman in Indonesia, for example, who was asking me how to apply some of these principles in her own home. And I think that the world over, as we've gotten the ability to build larger houses or more space, we haven't understood how to make that space really work for us. it just more space in and of itself doesn't do the trick. An open plan without thinking about what is the shape of the space, how is there a hierarchy of spaces that's indicated, for example, by ceiling height, that allows you to know that there's a central space and then that there are alcoves off that central space. That's what gives us this sense of home. If it's all the same height, it's boring whether it's 8 foot, 9 foot, or 10 foot ceiling. So that's really what I'm trying to help people understand, how to make it feel like home.
And we're about out of time here, but I kind of want to transition to where we're going to be heading in the second half, which is the outside space of our homes. Can you offer just some quick tips on applying these principles to our backyards and gardens?
Absolutely. They apply just as strongly to the outside as to the inside. When you're thinking about your garden, about your backyard, start to think about it as an outside room and as a series of places for sitting, for walking, for enjoying that outdoors. And one of the books that I've written with a landscape designer, Julie Moyer-Mersurvey, talks about how to make that connection between inside and outside feel really strong and substantial. That's called Outside the Not-So-Big House.
Sarah Susanka is a headline presenter at this weekend's Greater Kansas City Home Show at Bartle Hall. You can find more information about her appearances on UpToDate page on our website at kcur.org. Sarah Susanka, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Suzanne.
And Patrick Willis of Willis Construction, thank you so much for joining us in studio.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break. It may not be on the top of your mind while you're outside drinking a yard beer like Hams or even a fancy cocktail, but grains, living bacteria, and herbs, and all sorts of plants and bits of nature are a part of your boozy beverages. We're going to talk to the drunken botanist, author Amy Stewart. UpToDate will return in just a moment.